Let's get back to what happened on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's your host, Tom Inadnet.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you here. Once again, if you'd like to join us, please give us a call at 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-4-IN. Now, you know, there's another interesting treaty, and again, like I said in the first segment, the reason I tend to concentrate on some of these treaties, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, I actually went out and purchased Dick Morris's new book, Screwed, and it goes through a lot of these hidden governmental movements that we don't ever get to see because they're not on any of the mainstream TV stations. They never make it. They do have to get ratified by the United States Senate, but they do not have to be ratified by the House. So as long as the Senate is controlled by, shall we say, supporters of President Obama, there's a real danger that some of these things will go through, even if, and here's a move, they're trying to take most of these treaty negotiations and they're move them behind the election, back to late November, early December, while the Congress is still in a lame duck session. And the reason they do this is because they can vote and pass something, and without, even if we find out about it, it's too late. The election has already happened. And once it's ratified by a Senate that may no longer be in power come January, it's too late. It's already been done. Now, this latest treaty is called the Right of the Child Treaty. Now, according to Wikipedia, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child is a human rights treaty settling out the civil, political, economic, social, health, and cultural rights of children. Now, that's a laudable goal. Okay, so it's actually aimed at things that, such as stopping child prostitution, human trafficking, eliminating the use of children as soldiers, which, you know, are all laudable goals. The problem with this, and this is according to Dick Morris, is that it creates a legal entitlement from the United States to other countries. In other words, what it does is it not only does it lay guidelines for the, quote, rich countries in the world on ways to treat their children, it also would force the United States and other rich countries to increase foreign aid so that less fortunate countries can have the money to implement the same changes for the children in their country. In other words, we're going to have to pay them so that they can raise up the standards of their own children. Now, there's a couple of things about that. Number one, ladies and gentlemen, we know that to many of our enemies, many of the people who are our adversaries, our foreign aid to them is simply money in their pocket. They're not going to use it at all for what we tell them to use it for if they can get away with it. Now, this treaty was originally negotiated under President Bush and President Clinton, but we refused to become involved. The Senate refused to see it. Now, Hillary Clinton has recently restarted the negotiations. Now, the bad part about this is that it, again, provides a legal entitlement that's enforceable in our country, and in the courts, to welfare and foreign aid. In other words, an individual can come up to a court and say, I need more welfare for my children, and the court can provide that regardless of federal regulations. Now, and here's an example. And again, this is according to Dick Morris. When Cameron, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, cut welfare benefits as part of his austerity program, way down to, get this, $33,000 for a single individual. He cut it down to $33,000, which is, you know, a not terrible yearly wage. He was sued by the Child High Commissioner in Britain under the Treaty of the Child, to which Britain was a signatory, saying that he was violating the treaty in cutting welfare benefits, trying to control his country's expenditures by lowering welfare to a single individual to $33,000, which, again, is a decent wage. He tried to cut it down to that decent level and was sued by the Child High Commissioner because it was a violation of the treaty. Now, understand that under the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, any treaty that the United States signs with a foreign power to which is ratified by the Senate and in force assumes the same priority as any other laws, as a constitutional amendment would, over any other laws. In other words, once a treaty is in place, it takes a constitutional amendment to get rid of it, or it has to expire, and that could be 15, 20, 25 years, however long it is. Now, Congress can't violate it. State legislatures can't violate it. The courts are obligated to enforce it. The only way to change it would be a constitutional amendment or another treaty that supersedes the treaty, and it has to be signed by all nations that signed the original one. In other words, the courts would have the power to order higher welfare payments, more Medicare, more Medicaid, and more foreign aid. Now, ladies and gentlemen, all of these are things outside the scope of the courts. They're not, so the courts do not have the ability or the right to handle how much welfare any particular individual gets, or Medicare or Medicaid. This is too much power to the courts. It's not in the purview of the court. Now, a couple other things. Now, Michael Ferris of Percival, Virginia, is president of the Parental Rights Organization and chairman of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and chancellor of Patrick Henry College. Now, he said that under this U.S. Convention on the Rights of the Child, every decision that a parent makes can be reviewed by governments to determine whether or not it's in a child's best interest. And here's the click here, ladies and gentlemen. It puts in the court's purview the ability to judge the child's best interest. Now, people say, well, big deal. Courts do that all the time. Well, they really don't. They only do that when the child's best interest is in question. For instance, in a divorce, what is in the child's best interest? Well, what this does is it's going to remove the burden of figuring your child's best interest from the parents to the court system. So a judge can actually come and say, no, you can't spank that kid. Now, when I was a kid, I was a bad kid. I got my behind paddled, and what that taught me was don't be a bad kid. Now, understand, although this treaty was originally signed by Madeleine Albright, the United States ambassador to the UN, in February of 1995, the United States Senate never ratified the treaty, largely because of conservative efforts to point out that it would create a list of rights which primarily would be enforced against parents. And some of those rights, now some of these are a little off. Now, understand that when I got this material, I have to say that when I first read this, it seemed a little incredulous. But when I'm doing some further research now, and this goes a little too far, but remember when Obamacare was ratified by the Supreme Court, one of the biggest problems that we had was that gave government, ratified by the Supreme Court, it gave the government the right to tax our behavior, which was an incredible intrusion. And yet here's this right of the child treaty that has laudable goals. We don't want children in combat and things like that. But it's going to be able to give the right of the courts and international courts, not just our own courts, where parents could no longer administer reasonable corporal punishment. A murderer, get this, age 17 years, 11 months, and 29 days at the time of the crime could not be held could not be sentenced to life in prison. Okay, so that would remove the state's ability to administer punishment to young offenders, especially offenders who commit heinous crimes such as murder. Now, children would have the right to choose their own religion, while the parents only have the ability to suggest, okay, son, we want you to go to this church. But you can't force, under this treaty, you couldn't force your child to go to school or go to a particular church. Now, that's a problem with figuring out the best interest and giving and taking the best interest of the child away from the parent and giving it to an administrative body, a bureaucrat. For example, the child's right to be heard clause would allow him or her to seek government review of every parental decision he doesn't agree with. And how many parental decisions does your child agree with? I mean, let's be honest. You're grounded because you drank daddy's beer. Well, now the kid can go up and say, listen, I need to be heard, and I want a judge to see if me being grounded is a just punishment for this. Now, that's outside the purview of the courts, but this treaty will allow this type of government oversight to intrude into the very way we raise our children. One more thing, and I have to bring this up because it really just, it staggers the mind. This treaty provides a clause that would guarantee children have a legally enforceable right to leisure. To leisure. In other words, they have the right to sit on their behind and say, nah, you take out the trash. Are you kidding me? The whole point of this is that it's taking, and it goes too far, okay? And it's taking the ability for us to control our children away from us, away from the parents. Now, that's the second giant intrusion into our freedoms in as many months. It's going to give a governmental body the right to figure out what's best for our children, even when that is not in question, as it normally would be in a case of divorce or child molestation or something to that effect. And this is absolutely unheard of. Now, President Obama has already indicated that he wants to sign the treaty and will submit it to the Senate for ratification by the lame duck Senate, like he did the START Treaty. Anybody understand the START Treaty? Now, he did this very thing in the START Treaty after the losses in the 2010 election, and it put the START Treaty before the lame duck Senate, and it ratified it, even where there's a new Senate that probably would not have ratified it because it would have had more conservative Republicans in it. As a matter of fact, right now, that same START treaty would not have the teeth, would not have passed at all because there are not enough votes for it in the Senate. You know, understand, it has to be a two-thirds majority, and the House does not get to vote on these things. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how you were brought up, and it's really none of my business, but I understand that my parents brought me up the best way they knew how. They seem to be in control. I have two brothers. I have a brother and a sister. Both of them were brought up well. We're all doing relatively successfully. I have children of my own, and I'm bringing them up. And from what I am seeing lately, well, not just lately, but in the news and in politics, the last thing I want to do is give some bureaucracy the right to tell me how to raise my child. It's none of their business. But yet they are struggling. They are worrying about how they can get more control. And the interesting thing about this, a lot like the gun control treaty, is that this is something that the administration does not have to campaign on. They do not have to worry about the ramifications of election. None of these things count. And it's something that even if they lose, we will be stuck with. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is something that we have to get a hold of. I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, we must be absolutely certain that we intervene in these kind of treaties. And the best way to do that is to get informed, ladies and gentlemen. Again, and I'm not really endorsing it one way or another, but the book Screwed by Dick Morris is an excellent, excellent reference for some of these things, give you an idea of what's going on. Also, ladies and gentlemen, understand that we don't have to put up with this. Remember, we have the power. I discussed last week or week before last about how they're trying, that they being the politicians, bureaucrats in charge, are trying to get power. Now, they're getting that power from us. We're the ones with the power. We're the ones that they have to come to get the power that they crave so much. Okay? And if we take our time and make certain that we elect individuals who have our best interest at heart and pressure the ones already in office to look at our best interest, not their own, then we can, in fact, stop these kind of things from happening. And it's up to us, ladies and gentlemen. Again, I'm going to tell you, don't just push that button. Get to know the candidate. Get to know the candidate that's currently in office. You can find your candidate's phone number or your senator's phone numbers on hundreds of different websites. As a matter of fact, I'm going to put that information on my Facebook page for this talk show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to take a short break. We will be back right after this.